The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Bill Maxwell and Steve Robson with you. And Simon, a relaxing week off, I hope, but you're probably ready for another holiday after a frantic Top Flight weekend.
I am, Bob. I came back in. It was really frantic. 3 a.m. Start, obviously, to welcome me back in quite nicely. But it had absolutely everything, those Sunday games and catching up with the Saturday ones, goals everywhere, terrible refereeing decisions, the lot. I think we've got the jingle to play from the off, and it'll carry on throughout the episode.
Absolutely. Now, before we play the jingle, which, as you say, is going to be a feature of pretty much all of these games from Match Day 30, we should pay tribute once again to Johnny Nicol for stepping into the co-host's chair last week. A superb performance from Johnny, and his appearance on J-Talk appears to have reversed the curse on Gunbar Osaka as well, after they notched a much-needed victory on Sunday. Sam, you're no doubt feeling the pressure to retain your spot in the side.
I am. I've had several calls for my resignation after Johnny's appearance. He was, terrific, a perfect person to step in. And I'm glad for him that Gamba have given him something to smile about, because, I don't think he'd have wanted to come on again if all he had to do was speak about Gamba's continued plight towards the relegation zone.
Yep, so as we said, a much-needed win for Gamba, which we'll come to, much later on in the episode, if we're honest. Sam, I've paid the price here for planning our rundown of this week's episode too far in advance. I thought we'd start off with a nice little review of the games from last midweek, highlighted by Kawasaki's 94th minute winner at Kashima, only for Frontale to repeat the feat in Sunday's game at home against Shonan. And those two wins, coupled with Yokohama F. Marinos dropping 2 points in the 89th minute of the Yokohama Derby on Saturday away at Yokohama FC, means that all of a sudden the champions are back 9 points clear with 8 to play. And, this looks like it might just have been the week that the title was won.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a week makes. I'm sure last time I was on the podcast, we were saying it was in Yokohama's hands and it was their title to lose. But yeah, Frontale have come through this period. As I said before, the ACL game was pretty crucial. I mean, they lost that, and it's kind of opened up their schedule a little bit, and they've come through this difficult period rotating their players. They've scored late goals, not playing particularly well in either of the games, but yeah, it's the stuff of champions, I suppose, the old cliche, to get those victories when it matters. And yeah, Yokohama FC did them a massive favour on Saturday.
Yes, most definitely. Now, we've mentioned that Frontale would need big contributions from fringe and emerging players with their squad hampered by injuries to key players, and of course after the departures of Ao Tanaka and Kaoru Mitoma. Well, their two match winners this week, Ten Miyagi and Kei Chinen, they might have just written themselves into Frontale legend.
Oh, I should think so. And Miyagi especially, it was an absolute ripper of a goal against Kashima, against a good Kashima team on the day, and just pulled out a moment of inspiration from out of nowhere. And Kei Chinen, who since coming back from it was a pretty disappointing loan spell at Oita last year, and he's not really contributed a lot at all this year, but yeah, for him to come up in the 94th minute to plonk a header in, I think he did himself an injury towards it as he was doing that, but yeah, a great moment for him and a great one for Kawasaki. And yeah, again, I think we've already awarded them the title a couple of times this season, but I think they're well on their way to winning it again.
Yeah, now, I was all set to ask you about last Wednesday's game, whether their late winner, and as you say, Miyagi's was an absolute cracker, and the fact that, he had the courage to take on a shot like that when, so many other more experienced players in the team, you would think a youngster like Miyagi would want to defer to them and, let them take the responsibility of taking such what turned out to be a match-winning shot, obviously, but, an important chance so late in the game. But, the fact that he took it on and came through with an absolute laser beam to win it. Well, I was going to ask you whether you felt that had papered over the cracks of the performance, for the first 80 minutes or so, because they had to come from behind. Juan Alano gave Kashima the lead, Kazuya Yamamura equalising with 7 minutes to go, and then Miyagi winning it at the death. But, after they've done it again, on Sunday. I mean, whether it papers over the cracks of the two performances or not, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because, I mean, they're two huge wins. They're, whether the performances are totally justified 6 points or not, is, as I say, it's just completely irrelevant. The results are the most important things, especially after F. Marinos had dropped the points on the Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of just shows the mentality behind this Frontale team, because I think they were better against Kashima than they were against Shonan, especially first halves. But if they can keep going like that, and they've got players all around the squad that are willing to go on and take shots on, like Miyagi was. And yeah, Miyagi, it's not just that game. Ever since he's come in, I don't think he's obviously not to the level of Mitoma, but he's still got that drive. He wants the ball all the time. He wants to then drive into the area, take shots on and create something. So yeah, it's a really good mentality to have, and when you have that belief about you, even if you're not playing very well, you can still go on and get these sorts of victories. And that it's going to be an absolute hammer blow to Yokohama F. Marinos, who weren't able to kind of eke out that victory when not playing well against Yokohama, and to see Frontale do it twice, it's got to be very demoralizing for them, but must give all the belief in the world to Frontale.
Yes, indeed. All right, so just before I forget, the other two results from last Wednesday, and Nagoya, of course, who came into the match day in the third spot in the table, drew 1-1 away at a 10-man FC Tokyo after the red mist descended on the Tokyo Talisman Leandro again late in the second half. That's led to a three-match ban from the J-League for Leandro, and the club have further announced that he won't be allowed to play in the two legs of the Levain Cup semi-final either, with some speculating that he might have played his final game for the club, that Kenta Hasegawa might have just completely run out of patience with him. And Cerezo Osaka won 1-0 away at Hiroshima thanks to a Ryosuke Shindo goal at 10 minutes into the second half. So yes, the match day 30 took place over the weekend, and the first game that we're going to talk about, the Kawasaki Shauna one, doesn't really have too many VAR incidents, but as we said off the top, it wasn't a great weekend for J-League officiating, so we'll just play the jingle now, and we'll just let it run throughout the whole episode. This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week. Okay, so it was a very derby-heavy match day, and we're beginning with the Kanagawa Derby at Todoroki, Kawasaki hosting Shonan. Of course, Frontale, that win over Kashima on Wednesday had extended their buffer over Yokohama F. Marinos back out to 7 points, but it was the visitors Shonan who took a 16th-minute lead when Satoshi Tanaka turned in Yuki Ohashi's deflected cross at the near post. But Reo Hatate headed to Frontale level 20 minutes into the second half, and then at the death, Kei Chinen rose to head home Akihiro Iyanaga's brilliant cross in the 94th minute, and Sammy started cramping up before he'd even hit the floor.
Yeah, it all kind of got to him, I think. It was he put everything into getting into that header, and just pushed off, and obviously, yeah, he'd run himself into the ground. He was playing up front on his own. They didn't go to Leandro Damian, who was on the bench, which is It looked a strange decision throughout the game, but yeah, Chinen obviously has proven his manager correcting them, getting that. It was a terrific ball from Iyanaga, who really, I thought, changed the game when he came on. Yeah, just his control, his quality on the ball, and this cross, it was absolutely on a plate for Kei Chinen, a terrific ball in, and really good header from Chinen, and it was just about deserved. I thought first half Kawasaki were pretty poor. I thought Shonan were a little bit faster to the ball. They looked like they were a little bit more up for it. Kawasaki maybe tiredness coming in. Obviously, they played in midweek and they'd rotated a lot. It wasn't the strongest looking team in that first half. But second half, they made a few changes. Marcinho had a bit of drive about him. And obviously, the quality, as I said, from Iyanaga. So yeah, in the end, I thought it was a really well deserved result and a good battling performance from Frontale. But yeah, for Belmare, it was a little bit disappointed they couldn't really push on from that 1-0 lead. They kind of sat off a little bit too more, and as we'll go on to with the Yokohama FC performance, they were so aggressive in the way that they played, but Shonan didn't quite show that. And when you sit back against a Kawasaki or a Yokohama or F. Marinos, they're eventually going to pick you off, and that's kind of what happened here.
Yeah, another huge 3 points for the champions, and now runaway leaders yet again. As we said, 9 points clear. They knew how important that win would be after they had seen Yokohama F. Marinos drop 2 points at the death of a pulsating Yokohama derby at Mitsuzawa on Saturday night. Host Yokohama FC took the lead 7 minutes before the break when Saulo Mineiro blasted home from the substitute Rio Germain's cutback. And then the second half, well, it pretty much had everything. First, Sven de Brodersen kept it at 1-0 by tipping a fierce drive from Marcos Junior onto the bar. But then the Yokohama FC keeper gave away a penalty and was yellow carded after clattering into Leo Ciara after the striker had dinked a shot over him but onto the bar and out of play. Brodersen was insistent that it wasn't a foul, it wasn't a penalty. You could clearly hear that on the audio of the game. Sam, what was your take on that?
Yeah, I don't think it was a penalty either. I don't think he impacted Leo Ciara's shot at all. He got the shot away well, and it was just a collision that kind of happens all the time. You see that when like a player gets a cross in and then a defender is there to block it and they collide. So I didn't think it was a penalty. I was on Brodersen's side. I can kind of see why it was given. There is contact, but I thought it was a soft one, but, I mean, it was by far not the worst decision made in this game.
Yes, indeed. So, Yokohama FC's protestations lasted a couple of minutes, but then Marcos Junior drove home his penalty under Brodersen's dive to make it 1-1 just past the hour. But then the Yokohama FC almost took the lead again when Mineiro, who quite frankly was looking like peak Adriano in his Inter heyday, smashed a shot across Yohei Takaoka, but back off the post. Sam, they often talk about exit velocity on home runs in baseball. I shudder to think what speed that left Mineiro's boot at. I mean, there's no point asking Takaoka because he never saw it. I don't think I've seen a harder hit shot all year.
Yeah, I mean, I barely saw it as well. It hit the post and cleared the area. By the time I'd even taken note of it, it was a terrific strike. I mean, I've not seen a great deal of Saulo Mineiro so far. He's not really shown anything in any of the games that he's come on for, but he's mainly been reduced to substitute appearances. But he was playing like a man possessed in this game. It was like he decided that it was his game to try and win, and he was terrific, and this was such a good effort. I mean, poor Takeoka had no chance of stopping it, and he's so unlucky. Saulo Mineiro, yeah, terrific shot, and yeah, Adriano comparisons are well worth it there.
Well, yeah, I mean, he came on at halftime in the game that Yokohama FC played away at FC Tokyo a couple of weeks ago. But to be honest, he didn't do anything memorable at all. And, yeah, he just was playing like an absolute man possessed. It was phenomenal to watch. Yokohama F. Marinos breathed a sigh of relief, as we say, when the ball cannoned off the post and, exited the penalty area very, very smartly. But then the twists and turns in this game kept on coming. F. Marinos lost midfielder Kota Watanabe to a second yellow card after he slid in needlessly on Mineiro, who was at the centre of pretty much everything. But just 4 minutes later, the 10 men took the lead when Daisen Maeda swept home Takahiro Ogihara's perfectly weighted angled ball into the box. So that was a pretty mental 5 minutes just in itself, Sam. The second yellow for Watanabe, for mine, the F. Marinos can't have any complaints at all about that, although their staff certainly did from the touchline.
Yeah, I don't know what they could complain about. Watanabe just slides in really clumsily. He's nowhere near the ball. And yeah, it was a clear second yellow card, so no complaints there. And yeah, I don't know what Watanabe can really have to argue about. A definite red card.
Yep. But so that goal from Maeda obviously put the 10 men of F. Marinos in front, as I said, but just when it looked like they were going to hold on for maybe not a famous win, but yes, a derby win is always very much appreciated, especially when you're in a title race. A goal-mouth scramble led to Germain heading across the box, and Mineiro, yes, that man again, side-footed home from 2 yards out, with Ken Matsubara trying to block on the line, but not realising that he was a yard inside the goal when he indeed did try and bundle the ball out back into play. So that made it 2-2, but then in the 93rd minute, a stunning save from Takaoka, or was it? kept out Minero's leaping header, confirmed after a VAR review. But I reckon, Sam, if J1 had goal line technology, that very much would have been given.
Yeah, I think it's over the line, and I think they're hamstrung a little bit by having to use VAR, because I don't think they looked at that and can be 100% certain it's over the line, even though I think the pictures do show it, so they've had to err on the side of caution. But yeah, goal line technology, that would have been clear within a second. You'd know whether it was in or out, and I think Yokohama FC have been hard done to. It did look over the line for me, but yeah, no goal line technology. I'm not 100% sure why that's not been brought in. I'm sure it's just financial, but they've just gone straight to VAR without that little step with their goal line technology. But yeah, I think their calls from Yokohama FC supporters might be a bit louder for it after this one.
Yes, indeed. And there was still about 10 things that happened after that. But goodness me, Sam, an absolutely breathless encounter. And the perfect example of the form book going out the window in a derby match. This was the 20th place team hosting the team in second. The team in second, of course, who are pushing for a second league title in 3 years. And, well, you could say if you think one team deserved the points more than any other, we can certainly agree that Yokohama FC were hard done to at the end. Yeah, just a simply phenomenal match and a terrific advertisement, if nothing else, for J1 football.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't get to watch this one live. I was still with my dad on a holiday. But I'd heard all about this game, so I had to watch that late last night. And yeah, it just lived up to the hype that I'd seen about this game. It just was really helped. The derby feel had definitely helped it. And Yokohama's FC's position in the table, where they absolutely had to win, it just let them go all out. They just were really aggressive from the start, and they put Marinos under a lot of pressure, especially in that first half. But even to take nothing really away from F. Marinos, because they responded very well in the second half. They kept creating chances themselves. They went ahead when they were down to 10 men, so it wasn't like F. Marinos just didn't turn up and didn't put in a performance, but just Yokohama FC raised their game so many levels above what we've been used to, and in the end they will think that they were really robbed of a victory with the decision at the end, and they'll be unhappy with the penalty as well. So I thought on the balance of it, I still think a draw was actually fair, but Yokohama FC played superbly well, and I don't think there would have been too many arguments if they'd come away with a victory.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. So in the wash-up, that leaves the title race, yes, very much advantage Frontale again, and 9 points clear with the 8 games to play. And I guess one of the main reasons that Toru Aniki rotated so much from Wednesday to Sunday, Sam, is that, yes, they have a fixture to make up against Kobe this coming Wednesday night. But, of course, later on they don't have to play their match day 32 fixture after the international break, when everybody else will be playing, because that's already been taken care of with what the J-League thought was going to be some ACL commitments for Frontale. So, we might see a similarly rotated team for the game against Kobe, which means, yes, we're likely to see Leandro Damião, Akihiro Ienaga, etc. from the off. So that should be another fascinating encounter. And, it's really hard to look past Frontale now, isn't it? Obviously, F. Marino's still 8 games to play themselves. So as they sit on 66 points, the most they can do, the best they can do, is win all their remaining 8 games and get themselves to 90 points. In that case, then, Frontale need 16 from their, the 7 games before they play F. Marinos on the final day to wrap it up before then. And obviously, if you're a betting man, your money would be very much stacked on that. I guess in previous episodes, Sam, we've kind of run through the fact that, and Johnny mentioned it last week, of course, they do have similar-looking fixture lists remaining. So, I don't know, obviously we don't want to call it now, but it's just as we wrap up the title race, it does look very very difficult for F. Marinos now. They're going to rely on not just one, but 2 or 3 slip-ups from Frontale.
Yeah, it does look difficult. I think bar about two fixtures, the other fixtures are identical, and you wouldn't say that you wouldn't expect Kawasaki to drop 9 points of those fixtures more than F. Marinos would. So it is difficult. I think Marinos, the biggest things for them are the next two games that Frontale play, because they're still in this kind of tough run of games. They're going to have to rotate against Kobe and then FC Tokyo, two very difficult games. So that's, I think, is F. Marinos' best chance of getting back into this, because if Frontale win both of those games, they'll be 12 points clear at least, with having played one game more, but that seems pretty insurmountable with only six games left for Frontale. So yeah, I think they really are hoping that Kobe and Tokyo do them a favour, because yeah, if not, I think it's almost all over.
Yep, fair enough then. All right, well, credit to Frontale and, credit to F. Marinos as well for putting on a fantastic show against Yokohama FC on Saturday. Just disappointing for their fans that they weren't able to take all 3 points and keep up the more pressure on Frontale at the top. So we've talked about the title race, and there are also a number of important games in the race for third. But having covered the results for Shonan and Yokohama FC in match day 30, let's turn our attention to the relegation dogfight. And the big clash on the slate was a huge six-pointer at the Yurtec Stadium, where 18th-placed Sendai hosted Tokushima, a place above them in the table. And ultimately, this game has gone right down to the wire, and defender Hidenori Ishii's 90th-minute winner breathes new life into Tokushima's survival hopes and left Sendai in a huge hole with 8 games left to play. Ishii tapped in from a yard out after Jakub Slovic had saved Mushaga Bakanga's header from a Ken Iwao corner. Not the highest quality game, as I guess we expected from these sides, Sam. But with the late drama, I think we can give Johnny a pass for making this his game of the weekend.
Yeah, he fell into my trap of trying to pick a relegation battle, and it doesn't turn out to be that good a game of football. But yeah, it had some excitement finally at the end, because the first 90 minutes were dreadful. But thankfully, something happened. I mean, it's so vital that for Tokushima that they've won this game, because in the position that they're in, if you've got a game against anyone that's in and around you, it becomes absolutely must win, and a 0-0 here would have done nothing for either team. But yeah, it's a really important goal for Tokushima, gives them some hope, because they've just kind of wallowed for most of the season, not doing a great deal. So this gives them a little bit of impetus. It's a crushing blow, though, for Vigalta Sendai, because they'd have looked at this a home game against Tokushima. Absolutely vital that they won it, and they're now 5 points adrift. And as we've said for a long time, really, there's not quite enough quality in that Sendai team, because they had reasonable possession in this game, but they didn't create a great deal at all. I don't think Kami Fukumoto was tested, and it's pretty unacceptable if you're playing a fellow relegation contender at home. You've got to do a bit more than that going forward, and they didn't. And Tokushima took their chance and have given themselves, a really good chance of getting out of this. And it's livened things up a little bit more at the bottom, because there was a little bit of a worry that three had been cut away maybe, and then maybe Tokushima would do the same. But yeah, they've got themselves to within a point, so it still looks like we could have an exciting finish to this season at the bottom.
Yes, most definitely. So just before we move on to the situation as a whole down at the bottom, there were some Sendai protestations at the fact that this goal was allowed to stand. Did you think there was any merit to their protest, the fact that Ishii might have been standing in an offside position blocking Slovic's blocking Slovic's view of Bakenga's header? I mean, I think VAR confirmed that he was at least level. So to me, it looked okay. And Sendai might have just been complaining, as teams usually do when they concede goals these days.
Yeah, I think it was more out of desperation, to be honest, with conceding in the 90th minute. They were just hoping anything would be given. But yeah, I didn't see anything particularly wrong with it. And I thought, absolutely fine for it to stand. It was just, I just imagine sheer frustration from Vigalta that this game had got away from them.
Yep, okay then. So no major VAR incidents from this game then. And yes, that win, coupled with Shonan losing, and as we're going to come on to very shortly, Shimizu losing on Friday night, means that Vortis are now just a point behind Belmare, who sits 16th, and three adrift of S-Pulse. They host suddenly wobbly Tosu this Sunday, and then return from the international break with games against the current bottom two, Yokohama FC and then Oita. They also travel to Shonan for a potentially pivotal clash in match day 37. Now, Sendai, who are 5 points from safety, travel to Oita after the break and also still have to face Shonan, while Oita, who are 6 points adrift, and Yokohama FC, who are 8 points behind Belmare, are still alive, but only just. But yes, I mean, obviously I've mentioned Oita several times in the last minute or so, so they're playing a number of six-pointers themselves in the remainder of the season. So obviously that does give them some hope. Outside the drop zone then, Shonan's next two are against Yokohama F. Marinos and Tosu, but after that, their fixture list is dominated by six-pointers against Yokohama FC, Sendai and Tokushima, while S-Pulse have a fraction more breathing room, Sam, but they might just need it, as all of their final eight opponents are currently ahead of them in the table. And we know that Shimizu did finally win last week for the first time in an eternity, but obviously their current form is pretty dreadful as a whole. So to say they're going to be looking over their shoulders very nervously in the last 2 months of the season is a massive understatement, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and they shouldn't really be in the position that they are. I think their squad is, on paper at least, looks a lot stronger than those below them, but they've not pulled out the victories, and I think they'll be quite worried by the fixture list that you've just read out there. If there are a lot of games between teams below them, it means they're getting points. At least some of them are, and it's a very good chance that one of them gets enough points to drag Shimizu back down into those relegation places. So, yeah, really concerning time for Shimizu. I do think that there is enough in them to get a couple of victories against teams above them, but yeah, it's not the ideal situation you want to be in. You want to be playing those teams around you so you can do maximum damage to them and pull yourself away. So yeah, it's going to be quite worrying, but that whole fixture list there, it just leads to an incredibly exciting last eight games of the season. There's so many games that have a lot on the line in them, so yeah, it's just perfect for a neutral, but yeah, squeaky bum time for anyone that's down there.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So we've covered the top and the bottom of J1. We will take a short break and then we'll come back to round up the games that involve the teams in the hunt for third spot in the table and indeed the rest of the J1 Match Day 30 fixtures. Okay, welcome back. And at the end of part one there, when we rounded up the relegation zone, we're also talking about Oita and Shimizu, of course, and we're coming on to their results from match day 30 now. Oita travelled to Nagoya on Sunday, and right off the bat, Sam, another one potentially for goal line technology. Did Mateus's third-minute free kick cross the line before Shun Takagi batted it back into play? Very tough to say for sure on the replays that we saw.
Yeah, I did saw the one where it was Takagi's back was kind of blocking it, and there was another one from the other angle, but not down the line, so it wasn't completely clear whether it crossed the line. I'd err on the side of caution to say it probably didn't, but yeah, very close. It was one of about 5,000 Mateus free kicks that Takagi had to deal with. So yeah, good save for Takagi on this one, and it was probably his peak in this game because it all kind of went wrong pretty quickly afterwards.
Well, that's it. Yes, they didn't have to wait long before taking the lead, Grampus, despite that disappointment of Mateus's free kick maybe not crossing the line. Naoki Maeda's pressure caused panic from Takagi and indeed the entire Oita back line. Yoichiro Kakitani scuffed his shot. It ended up being a decent enough cross, though, for Maeda, who volleyed against the post before Sho Inagaki followed up to score his eighth of the season in the eighth minute. From there, Trinita did have some decent second half chances. The Japanese Wanma Shun Nagasawa headed and shot too close to Mitch Langerak, but Grampus saw the game out, Sam, to stay third and register a 19th clean sheet from their 31 league games.
Yeah, generally I thought they were pretty comfortable defensively. Oita, to their credit, they went for it. They played three strikers from the off in Nagasawa and Goya and Watanabe. So they tried to cause as many problems as they could. But when you give away a goal as early as they did against Nagoya, it's just perfect for Fikadenti's game plan. They sat deep. They hit them on the counter-attack, and Mateus was at the heart of every sort of breakaway. And, Nagoya, defensively, that when you don't keep 19 clean sheets, if you can't defend very well, and they did that. Oita, they need a lot of chances to score a goal. I mean, Nagasawa's two chances, they were presentable, but both straight at the goalkeeper. It wasn't really good enough, and, yeah, Oita just didn't seem to have enough about them to get the goal, and that's the reason that they're the lowest scorers in the league. And it was almost a perfect game, I thought, for Nagoya. They'd have liked one or two more goals just to make it a bit more comfortable, but yeah, it was pretty ideal for them, and they sit nicely in third. I still think maybe the ACL coming up might just disrupt them a little bit in their race to get back into the ACL. But, yeah, they're in a very nice form at the moment. And showing Ogaki, I mean, the amount of goals he's scored as a holding midfielder this season has been terrific. He's been one of the best players in the league, for my money. I don't know if you agree with that, Ben. But, yeah, I thought his performance again in that midfield, the amount of work he does, the dirty work in front of that defence. I mean, the defence and Langrat will get all the plaudits for the clean sheets, but so much of it is down to the work Inagaki does, and this was just another terrific performance from him and a good result for Nagoya.
Yeah, absolutely. You are Inagaki, a very worthy choice in the holding midfield role in our J1 team of the half season, Sam. And he hasn't done his prospects too much harm since then of making the final full season 11 either. And another match winner. He was specialising in them, of course, earlier on in the season. And another 3 points banked for Grampus. And they sit in pole position, as you say, Sam, in the race for third, albeit having played two games more than Kobe and one more than Urawa, who were both sit 3 points behind them. So, there's another couple of teams still scratching away behind those three as well, who might still have a say in the race for third. And, of course, Nagoya, to further complicate things, they also have a two-legged Levine Cup semi-final against FC Tokyo to play over the international break. So, no rest for the wicked in Massimo Ficcadenti's side. Kobe kept pace with Grampus after a 2-0 away win over Shimizu on Friday night. Kobe travelled to Nihon Daira. They got to enjoy a nice fireworks show at halftime as well, and then, left with all 3 points. They took a ninth-minute lead when Yuya Osako crossed from the left and Yoshinori Muto's header deflected off an S-Pulse defender to wrongfoot Shuichi Gonda at his near post. 10 minutes before the break, Kobe keeper Hiroki Ikura got down superbly to his right to keep out a header from Thiago Santana, who then fired over from 6 yards just before half-time. Santana had scored in four straight league games and was doing his best to make it five. But those two chances late in the first half were as good as it got for him and, pretty much for his S-Pulse teammates as well. The fireworks show at halftime, it might have revved up the host a little bit. Kenta Nishizawa fired against the outside of the post 5 minutes after the restart, but they never really threatened after that. And Vissel wrapped up the points when Leo Osaki's 87th minute shot took a deflection and rolled under Gonda's glove. It was a puzzling thing that Gonda did, Sam. The ball seemed to roll so slowly, but Gonda didn't seem to mind to let it go under his glove at all. Anyway, an important win for Vissel, but yet another disappointing result for S-Pulse.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't like Shimizu didn't have their chances, but Santana, I've quite liked a lot of what I've seen of Thiago Santana this season, but he missed a couple of decent ones, and there wasn't a lot else from his teammates. If he doesn't score, it doesn't look like Shimizu score, and they didn't take their chances. Vissel got a little bit of luck with both of them. Yeah, I don't know what Gonda was doing for Osaki's one. He could have dropped his cap on it, he could have had a cup of tea and then picked it up. I don't know what he was doing, but yeah, it's very interesting. And but Osaka and Muto, I thought they combined pretty well. They got a bit of fortune for the first goal. And what have you made of Osaka and Muto? I know it's hard to watch Muto in a Vissel Kobe shirt, but how do you think they've settled in back into the J-League?
Well, yeah, Muto looks terrific. Looks very, very motivated, and looked like he's had a point to prove since he's come back, and he seems to be right at his confident best. I mean, this is his first J1 goal in 6 years, and I wouldn't bet against him getting four or five more perhaps before the end of the season, because he seems to have fitted in very well. Obviously, when you're playing alongside a player as good as Osako, only can help. And I think Kobe have tried to play to Muto's strengths with trying to play some balls over the top where that is not always their MO. So it's interesting to see them try and bed him in and as I say, work him into their system, but also we'll let him express himself as well. And Osako, I guess it might have taken him a couple more weeks than Muto to really get up to speed, but he had a couple of chances here himself that on another day he might have buried. So I think this new look strike force for Kobe, they've obviously pumped a lot of money into it, and it might just bear fruit over the last 8 to 9 games of the season, because they're close enough to third to the point that they're not really going to have any excuses. And both Muto and Osako, big game players, very talented strikers. So I think we've ummed and ahed over the past few weeks, haven't we, Sam, about who we really think is going to finish third. I still think Kobe are the most or the second most likely, but we also know their penchant for screwing things up, so we wouldn't put that past them either. But it just changes on a week to week basis, doesn't it? This race for third.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really call it. I think you were right last week when you kind of ruled out Sagantos. So I think their race has probably been run now. I mean, they've got such a small squad. I don't think they've really managed to keep up with it. But if you look, Nagoya are in very good form. Kobe have got all the players. I'm still holding hope that Kashima can become a little bit consistent, because that's been my horse pretty much from the start of the season. But you can't really rely on them the same way that you can't necessarily rely on Kobe. But yeah, it's very open, and when Muto and Osaka are playing the way that they did in this game, and Muto especially, his runs off the ball, his movement, it's just been a lot better to watch than the Muto that was unfortunate enough to try and have to play a lone striker role for Steve Bruce. But yeah, this has been a lot more refreshing. But yeah, I can't call it, and I'm giving up trying to predict this race for third place.
Well, yeah, the only surprising thing this week is that the same team is in third that was last week, and that's Nagoya, of course, taking 4 points from their two games over this week. Also still very much in the hunt, and indeed top of the form table alongside Fukuoka, would you believe it, with the 13 points taken from their last 5 games, are Urawa Reds, their fifth. They have the same amount of points as Kobe, and a trail Nagoya by 3, having played a game fewer. Urawa travelled to FC Tokyo on Saturday afternoon and fell behind after 37 seconds when Kyosuke Tagawa chested down a long ball forward from Masato Morishige and fired past Shusaku Nishikawa. But Hiroki Sakai, who had been caught napping by Tagawa for the opener, perhaps was still getting over his pre-match chit-chat with Yuto Nagatomo, the former Marseille teammates lining up on the same flank. Well, Sakai drew Reds level on the stroke of half-time with his first goal since his summer arrival. One of the more puzzling offside decisions you'll ever see, Sam, and the only surprising thing, well, I guess not surprising at all, is that it took about 2 or 3 minutes for VAR to confirm that, yes, Sakai was a yard and a half offside, onside.
Yeah, that's not surprising. That's quite quick for VAR standards in this league. But yeah, it was. I think 2 or 3 defenders were playing him onside, so it was a terrible decision for the linesman initially, and why it takes so long, no one will ever know. But thankfully, justice was served, and Sakai's goal was allowed to stand. But yeah, yet more puzzling officiating on this weekend.
Yes, and yet more frustration for Tokyo. I mean, I always seem to get myself tied up in knots when I'm talking about Tokyo, so I won't bang on for too long. But yes, the same pattern followed from Wednesday night when Tokyo took the lead against Nagoya, but surrendered it just before half time. And yes, the pattern repeated here after a first half in which Urawa, well, dominated possession, but never really looked like they were clicking into gear. But in the first 10 minutes or so of the second half, they really upped their tempo and seemed to be able to cut through the Tokyo midfield at will. But then the pace slackened again, and then out of nowhere, Reds took the lead in the 66th minute when Takahiro Sekine blasted a shot from distance against the bar, the rebound falling at the feet of Ataru Esaka, who simply passed the ball into an unguarded net. And from there, Tokyo, they really lacked the inspiration. Adalton came on, but it wasn't really able to get up ahead of steam. And I guess it just goes to show again that Tokyo really miss Leandro, and they better get used to it, because, as I said earlier, he might have played his last game for the club. So, again, a frustrating one to take from a Tokyo perspective, but Reds took their chances, and they needed this win to stay properly in the race for third, and so they will have left very satisfied, and fair play to them, Sam. I said my piece on this game, so I guess Reds deserved it at the end of the day. I'll hold my hands up and admit that.
Yeah, I think so. I think they just about edged that second half with the extra tempo, as you mentioned. And Esaka he's started his career at Reds terrifically well. He's getting a lot of goals. I thought when the shot came back off the bar, he was the only player in the area to react. I thought the Tokyo defence were pretty static. And Esaka, pounced and got the goal. And really good result for Reds. I agree with you. You were missing a little bit of spark, FC Tokyo. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, actually. You mentioned at the start of the episode the two-game ban that the club have put on Leandro, which is for this Levain Cup semi-final and the both legs. What do you make of that as a Tokyo supporter? Are you with the club in terms of the extra discipline that you're giving Leandro, or do you think taking him away from two such crucial games is kind of cutting your nose off to spite your face?
Well, I mean, it's such a tricky one, but I mean, you just can't argue with the fact that he's got previous before, and I don't think he's a malicious person, but for some reason, as I said, the red mist just gets the better of him, and there's absolutely no reason at all he needs to raise his arm to Nakatani in that incident. And once the VAR check is underway, I mean, he probably knows straight away that he's got to walk. So if it was anybody else, if it was a first offence, then obviously it wouldn't be an issue, would it? But the fact that he's tested the limits of the club's patience before, on a couple of occasions last year, and I guess it was cliche alert, but I guess he was just a ticking time bomb, and it was just a matter of time when something like this was going to happen again. And it's unfortunate for all Tokyo supporters, but at the same time, I think you've got to draw a line in the sand, and it would be a shame if that's the last we see of him, because he's one of the most gifted players we've had at the club. But at the same time, you can't have a maverick like that running around and potentially scuppering, your prospects game to game. So I feel for the player, but he's got to know that he can't be doing that anymore. And the fact that he's infringed again, at the end of the day, he's only got himself to blame.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. It is such a shame, because after all the stuff that was happening at the start of the season, it got him into the team. It was working really well, that Otridente, as they were called. It looked, when they're on form, they look a really good team. But I agree with you. It is one incident after another with Leandro, and at some point you've got to say, you're as good a player as you are, that's probably time for us to kind of part ways. We can't kind of deal with that. So it is a shame, but I think Tokyo are doing the right thing.
It's really, really disappointing. But before we move on, I should say there was a sighting of the lesser spotted Bruno Uvini off the bench with 5 minutes to go against Reds. He was he came into the club as a very high quality centre back, but he made his first league appearance up front. He was thrown up forward by Hasegawa to try and cause some havoc up front in the last 5 minutes. Didn't have much of an effect, but that's probably due to the fact that he's a centre-back by trade. But it's good to know that Bruno is alive and kicking, and hopefully in the last couple of months of the season, yes, we will see some more of him. If there was ever any doubt in the back of my mind, there was probably a tiny little speckle right deep down in my gut, Sam, that those three letters that you cursed us with a few weeks ago might still be a possibility if we had have beaten Nagoya and Urawa in the past week. But the fact we've only taken 1 point from six means that, yes, that is officially curtains, and I have given up all hope, all eggs in the Levain Cup basket. But then, yeah, as you say, without Leandro, the prospects look a little bit more behind the eight ball there as well. But we shall see. Moving on from Reds' win to another important one for Kashima. They are very much up and down, the yo-yo team up in the top six these days, but on the weekend at least they kept pace with the teams above them by earning a 2-1 come from behind win at Cerezo Osaka on Sunday. Riki Harakawa put host Cerezo ahead just before the hour when he drove forward from midfield, laid the ball off to Takashi Inui, then rolled the return pass past Yuya Oki. But 10 minutes after coming off the bench as part of a triple change by manager Naoki Soma, ISA Wada equalised with his 10th goal of the season in the 66th minute, a glancing header from fellow sub Ryuji Izumi's cross, and Wada doubled his fun from the penalty spot 8 minutes from time to win it, although the hosts did have an 89th minute Ryuya Nishio goal chalked off for a very tight offside. The victory leaves the Antlers 4 points behind Nagoya in the race for third, although the two teams between themselves and Grampus, of course Kobe and Urawa, have games in hand on them. So thoughts on this game, Sam? And also, any VAR complaints here about the Nishio one right at the death?
No, I think Nishio was offside. I think this is a correct decision. He's behind, the goalkeeper's out further than him, so I think it's definitely the correct call there. It was a tight game, not a lot really happened first half. Both teams obviously had played in midweek, and I think, again, a bit of tiredness had crept in, but Kashima had those three subs that you mentioned. When you can bring on Wada and Araki especially, I mean, they're terrific players to come in. Wada kind of changed the game. His movement was a lot more impressive up front. I mean, still Everaldo's disappeared. I think I've kind of given up on Everaldo now. I've tried with him for a long while, but he's not completely out of the picture. But Wada has stepped into that breach and scored his goals. And I thought, they just had a little bit. Once they responded from Cerezo's goal, which was a good goal from Harakawa, a good driving run and a 1-2, and a fine finish. But otherwise, Kashima really kind of turned the screw in the last 20 minutes or so, and I think they just about deserved it. I thought, Kento Misawa midfield, I thought he was the player of the match for this one. I think he just absolutely dominated in there. He had a couple of long-range efforts himself, but it was him that kind of started all the moves, and Wada off the bench. Terrific finishes, and it's a win for Kashima. Well, this probably means a loss at the weekend, next weekend, so you don't really know what's happening with them, but it keeps them in contention, at least for now.
Yes, indeed. All right, so it mentioned that Reds are a joint top of the form table with Fukuoka. Yes, Avispa Fukuoka, their superb season continued with a 3-0 victory in the Kyushu Derby at home over Tosu, and the best Denki Stadium was rocking indeed. Well, the best that it can, of course, with the current COVID-19 restrictions. The Spanish Nagasawa Wanma continued his purple patch by blasting Fukuoka ahead 4 minutes before half-time, running onto a long header forward and holding off Hwang Seok Ho before firing past Park Il-gyu, but then it's fair to say that Tosu did not have the rub of the green in this game, Sam. We don't want to take anything away from Fukuoka, no question. They've deserved their victory. The first and the third goals, there are absolutely no complaints at all over them. But the fact that Tosu were denied a Keita Yamashita equaliser just before half-time, the linesman flagging him offside with the decision standing after a VAR review, even though replays suggested he was level with the ball or behind it before it was played across the box. I mean, this was arguably the most egregious VAR decision of the weekend.
Yeah, there are so many times this season where we've both, and I think everyone has looked at it, and it looks like he's offside, and he's definitely behind the ball, but then apparently it comes out on the J-League judge replay that the lines we were completely wrong, and he was offside. But I've not seen nothing here that suggests that he's in front of the ball. I think he's behind it, let alone level, and it just didn't make any sense to me. I don't know what the VAR has seen. It just baffled me. It looked completely onside, and obviously that makes it 1-1 to Tosu going into the half-time break, and it's a completely different game, so they've got every reason in my book to be absolutely furious with this decision. I await to see what the judge replay says on this, because I can't see it being offside. It just doesn't look it to me, but yeah, perhaps my eyesight really needs testing, as this season has shown.
Well, as I say, it just wasn't Tosu's day. They then went 2-0 down in the 68th minute when Eduardo slid in to clear off the laces of Yuya Yamagishi, but the ball hit the striker's knee and went in anyway. So again, there's no impropriety about the goal, but it was just unfortunate for Tosu that Eduardo had slid in and made good contact with the ball, but it just happened to rebound off Yamagishi and to go into the net. Yamagishi had taken the ball around Park and shaped to shoot. But yes, there were certainly no complaints about the third goal with Daiki Watari rubbing salt into Sagan wounds when he drove across Park and into the far corner in the 94th minute. Fukuoka claiming a terrific 3-0 win, all things considered. But, Sam, we wrote them off last week, Johnny and myself, and, I guess it's I'm allowed to at least get one thing right this season. Tosu's ACL chances took a significant, if not a terminal, hit in this match day.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe it would be completely different if that goal had stood. But second half, the wind was really out of their sails. It looked like kind of their race had been run. They didn't look to be getting back into that game. And Avispa, I thought, were very comfortable. I mean, Tosu, considering everything that's gone on before this season, during this season, I think the manager is still under an investigation. So you've got all that going on. The squad is so thin. They lost arguably their best player to Shimizu in the summer transfer window. So for them to have played the way that they have done so well, they brought freshness to the league. They played fantastically to be even in contention for the. And I don't want to sound too patronising to them, but I think everyone had them in and around the relegation places this season. A lot of people had them going down, but they've been fantastic. But I think it is a little bit of a step too far from them. The squads that the teams above them have are a lot stronger, a lot more depth. So. Yeah, unfortunately, I do think this is the end of the road for Tosu's ACL run, but they've been fantastic, and so have Avispa. I mean, talk about getting things wrong on this podcast. I think I had them to get relegated. After the start of the season, I had them to drop down because they'd probably be comfortable and then just take their foot off the gas, but they haven't done that at all. They've kept going. They're in a really good run of form, as you mentioned, and I'm even turning on Wanmar. Last couple of games, the last few games, he has been terrific, and he scored all manner of goals. And he's just kind of, the one thing I really disliked about him was the way he just chucked himself to the floor. But even that has gone out of his game. So I have to give a lot of credit to him. He's keeping other players out of like John Mary out of the side and Bruno Mendes, who in my opinion look better strikers. But Wanmar is in superb form. So yeah, credit to him, credit to Avispa. And it's another one for Daniel against Thomas in the Avispa versus Tokyo battle.
Yeah, I reckon it seems to seesaw every weekend, but Fukuoka back above FC Tokyo, and we can have no complaints at all about that. Wanmar rocking a pretty decent haircut these days, and he's been banging them in. Another goal to add to his collection here. The opener, of course, and Fukuoka continue to roll. And we have to give pay our respects to the massive down at the Best Denki Stadium. The maximum crowd allowed for this game was 5,000, and they managed to squeeze 4,996 in there. So shame on those four people who bought tickets but didn't go. But it was obviously a big occasion, and the home fans were rewarded with a terrific performance from their Avispa side. And well done again to them. All right, well, we've got two games left to review, Sam, and Johnny Nicol will be a very happy man after his appearance on the pod last week reversed the curse on Gunba Osaka. Although I do fear, Sam, that Johnny won't want to come on again, because obviously this is going to start a good run of form for Gunba, and that will obviously continue for as long as Johnny's away from the pod.
Yeah, but that is the way that things go on here. But I don't think he'll be too disappointed if he's getting Gamba performance, and he's getting Usami playing a lot better as well. I mean, he's fielded a lot of questions last week. He's done on his question answer that he did a couple of weeks ago. I asked him about Usami's performance, and it's not quite been there. But in this game, it was his deliveries that were causing a lot of problems for Kashiwa, led to both of the goals. And yeah, Gamba, especially first half, I thought they put in a much better performance. They did very well in midweek in the Emperor's Cup. They thrashed Shonan in that one and kind of kept a similar team, at least in the attacking positions, because with the run that they've had with the extra games that they've played, they've had to do a lot of chopping and changing. So it was quite refreshing, actually, that Gamba were able to keep a fairly similar team together, and it paid off for them. They looked a lot more of a cohesive unit going forward, and it's a good result for him. I'm glad for Johnny, and it also keeps me a little bit a little bit of security in this job, because Johnny might not be pushing for my job straight away.
Yes, indeed. Well, good to see Gamba back on the winning list. And, that's right. I mean, we were talking about Usami last week and wanting to see more of him, and indeed to see him in the team more. And, he made the most of his chance here. His goal in the third minute came when he drove a free kick from wide on the left across the box, the ball bouncing just in front of Kim Sing-gyu and going in off the keeper's gloves. Kim not covering himself in glory there, perhaps. And then Usami assisted Gamba's second in the 26th minute from his free kick from deep on the right. Shinya Suganuma rose to power home a header from 6 yards for his first J1 goal in 8 years. Quite a wait for our Shinya, but a terrific header it was. With 5 minutes to go, Yuta Kamiya set up a nervy finale for the home side when he turned in from inside the 6-yard box after superb work down the left from Cristiano. But yes, Gamba held on for their first win in 6 games. Now, with the Tokushima winning, Sam, it obviously didn't give them any more breathing room outside of the drop zone, but it did move them above Kashiwa in the table on goal difference. So both of those teams are now 7 points from dropping down. But I mean, for Gamba, this result surely will, and coupled with the Emperor's Cup in midweek, give them a lot more belief to take into the final 2 months of the season, you'd think.
Yeah, I think it should do, and their schedule's a lot nicer just in terms of the games that they have to play. They don't have midweek games every week, so they should be able to settle in on a more consistent team, and I think they should be pretty safe. And Kashiwa also, they've both got 7-point gaps. Obviously, Kashiwa are not in as good a form recently as Gamba, but I think both should be okay. I mean, yeah, I don't necessarily see, maybe just one or two more victories, I think, should be enough for those. And I just wanted to kind of ask you about Kashiwa Reysol. Obviously, you were there to see, watching their Leuven Cup final last week, last season. So they were there, but they lost Ilunga, they've lost Osaka. What do you make about the way that their squad is? This week, Pedro Raul, that came in, he played a couple of games, looked quite good, but he's already left for Mexico. What do you make of what's gone on there? Their squads, there's still a lot of quality in there, but they just seem to be really struggling and can't get any consistency.
Well, yeah, I thought he looked a really good player, didn't he, Pedro Raul? So that's a real shame for them that he's gone. I don't know. I guess in some ways their squad kind of reminds me of Tokyo's. I mean, there's a lot of decent middling players in there, but there, apart from Cristiano, there isn't really anybody that can really turn a game or, you know, so I think they're probably where they deserve to be. And they're, you know, I think we've said it a couple of times throughout this season, they're going to have, a lot of decisions to make, presuming they survive, as to how they move forward. Because, yeah, if they want to push back up the table, and again, a lot of people, you know, were very impressed with them last season and hoped they would be able to maybe even kick on this season. That was a tall order once that Olunga was confirmed to be leaving. But, yeah, there's obviously you take, as you say, you take Osaka out of there as well, and that's a... that leaves another huge hole. But yeah, they seem to be treading water at best, and there doesn't seem to be an awful lot coming through to really inspire confidence, I think, for the supporters at Hitachi Dai. So I don't know whether they're going to be settling in for a season or two of mid-table mediocrity. I guess where they're sitting at the moment, they'll probably take that next season. But yeah, for a team that has always shown a lot in an attacking sense, they really seem to be struggling for standout options at the moment. And yeah, the product that they're putting out, it's I mean, they've just beaten FC Tokyo, so I can't really talk too much. But I mean, yeah, I think there are a lot of average to decent players in their squad, and they're going to need to bring in some more quality. And it looked like they've done that with the Pedro rule. So, I'm not really sure where they go going forward, Sam.
Yeah, it's really weird. I just thought, like, we spoke a lot about the foreign players that they just threw in the middle of the season. It was just a kind of hodgepodge, and we didn't see a lot of Emerson for a while. Doji's not playing, and obviously they've got rid of Pedro also. It just looks like a team that's been chucked together. It doesn't really make a lot of sense the way that they've built this team. I mean, they've had so many injuries as well, which you can put a lot of it down to bad luck, but then you have to look, is there something going on in the training sessions? Is there something not right? Because they shouldn't have this amount of injuries. They've had far more this year than they did even last year, and that was playing after the COVID and such a truncated season. So I think there's a lot of issues there. There are a lot of rumours about the Pedro Raul exit, that there was some sort of clash with Nelsinho. I just wonder if Nelsinho might take his exit at the end of this season. They just try and freshen things up, because yeah, the way that this team is going, once they lost those two players, they've got, yeah, it's, as you said, a very middling to average squad. So I think it needs like a kind of a fresh coat of paint on it. And yeah, but they've just got to survive this season. I think they will do, but yeah, it's been fairly uninspiring for Kashua, who are used to such good flowing attacking football and being towards them. Well, I mean, they've kind of yo-yoed, haven't they, the last few years. But you do expect a certain brand of football with Kashua, and that's not really been the case for the last, well, at least this season.
No, that's right. And yeah, there'll be an interesting team to watch in the off season. There's sure to be a lot of comings and goings at the Hitachi Dai Stadium, I'm sure. Okay, so yes, the game that got Sam up early on Sunday was, well, the only game in the match day that really had nothing riding on it at either end of the table. It was a Sapporo hosting Hiroshima, and Sanfrecce scored early through Shoal Sasaki in just the 3rd minute, and late through Douglas Vieira's 84th minute, icing on the cake from the penalty spot after an interminable 4-minute VAR delay, with the veteran keeper Takuto Hayashi denying Consadole with a string of fine saves as the visitors won 2-0 to stay 10th in the table, and now 3 points above their hosts, and indeed a Cerezo Osaka as well. So, yes, you were awoken from your slumber, as I say, Sam. It could have been a higher profile game, but yes, well, Hiroshima got a goal early to at least snap you out of things.
Yeah, it's never too bad, because it's usually Sapporo that wake me up with their early games, and they're so open that it's always going to be an interesting game, and Hiroshima took advantage of that. They got their goal, and Sapporo, just, they keep going forward, but I mean, they're really lacking that main striker, I think. That Tuchic just come in, he hasn't done too much. Bothroyd wasn't in the squad. Douglas Oliveira has done very little since joining. So they play with Ogashiwa, who's a decent enough player, but you've got no real goal scorer in there. And yeah, they need at least like 10 chances to score a goal. And at the back, they're just really open. So it was, yeah, Hiroshima, who don't score that many themselves, but they found themselves in decent positions to score. So it was a reasonable game. It obviously didn't have anything really riding on it, but yeah, it was a fairly watchable one for a 3 a.m. get up, so that's fine.
Yeah, now there's one more VAR thing that I want to mention, Sam, and again, you'll probably educate me on the offside law after letting me know that Cerezo's goal couldn't have stood because Nishio was standing ahead of the goalkeeper anyway, let alone the defender that I thought might have been in line with him. But Takuma Arano scored for, was it Kaneko or Arano? I can't remember. it was Kaneko scored. The ball was played through to him, but he was in an offside position when it was played, but it did appear to take a deflection off Toshihiro Aoyama on its way through. So Kaneko took the ball on and scored, but then once the flag was raised, obviously made a point of rushing over to the referee to say that the ball had come off Aoyama. So the initial decision is right there, or does Kaneko have a case for the fact that the ball came off Aoyama?
Yeah, this is in a bit of a grey area, and Petrovic was sort of signalling it on the sidelines. The deflection doesn't necessarily matter, but it's if Aoyama has made a clear attempt to clear the ball and could have done it, like he wasn't under any pressure to do that. So if he tries to clear it and just messes it up and it goes to Kaneko, then he's onside. But I don't think that was the case in this one. I don't think it was an actual clearance. I just think it does deflect off him as he's trying to kind of intercept more so than clear. So it's a bit of a weird grey area, but I think the decision is correct. But yeah, if he'd have tried to swing it clear and just sliced it back, then Kaneko would have been onside. But yeah, I don't think it was quite as clear cut as that.
This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week. Okay, gotcha. Thank you very much, mate. Okay, and so with that then, that is all 10 games from the weekend's match day 30 rounded up. Again, potentially a monumental one in the J1 title race, with Frontale going back at 9 points clear at the top. And they, as we've said earlier, they play at Kobe in a rearranged game from match day 28 on Wednesday night, and then the match day 31 slate, which is the last round before another international break, gets going on Friday night with another Kanagawa derby. It's a Shonan hosting Yokohama F. Marinos. That's obviously a kickoff. F. Marinos could be 12 points behind the leaders, which means that, that obviously makes it a must-win for them at the Lemon Gas Stadium in Hiratsuka. Elsewhere, there are some interesting-looking games, Sam, but I don't want to steal your thunder. So what's your pick of the J1 weekend?
I mean, I don't know if it'd be your pick necessarily, but I'm going for the Tamagawa Classico. It has to be. Tokyo, I mean, you'd love nothing more than to try and put a dent in Kawasaki's title run. And Kawasaki will be completely up for that. There's usually a lot of goals whenever they play. Unfortunately, usually in your net. But I do think that's I can't really look past that. But you might want to watch from behind the sofa.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Oniki puts out his A team against Kobe in midweek, we might have a chance if he puts out the reserves on Saturday evening at Todoroki, but I don't give us much of a chance at all there. And I appreciate the mention of Tokyo, but I'm surprised you didn't go for Kobe Urawa. The two teams knocking on the door behind Nagoya, they meet at 3 o'clock on Saturday at the Noriviru Stadium. So, well, I guess for international listeners, if you're or neutrals, these games are perfectly stretched out, so you can watch Kobe Urawa at 3 o'clock and then Kawasaki FC Tokyo at 5, so your options are covered there. And then if you fancy watching Johnny's Gumba Osaka side making it to two league wins on the spin, well, yes, they kick off at 7, so that's your afternoon and evening covered. But, yeah, there are some interesting-looking games up and down the slate, Sam. Not really any relegation six-pointers to speak of, though. But, I don't know, Sendai, perhaps last-chance saloon for them when they travel to Kashiwa?
Yeah, that's quite close. I mean, especially if Sendai win, and you could maybe argue that Vortis could get a victory against Tosu, or a little bit out of it at home, that brings Kashiwa right back into the relegation places. And, you know, we've just said that we think they're probably safe, but yeah, they could, the way that we go usually, I mean, they'd probably end up in the relegation zone by the end of the week, the way that our predictions go. But yeah, I think they have to get something out of that Sendai. I mean, it's ideal for Kashiwa, you'd say. That's the game you'd really want if you were just trying to get yourself out of any sort of danger. But yeah, Sendai have to go for it, and Reysol can be there for the taking, so that would be interesting. As I said, mentioned Vortis, I think, have a decent chance, and Oita at home to Cerezo. I mean, Cerezo, very little to play for themselves. Those are the teams that you want to be playing at this stage of the season, so they've got to give that everything to get themselves out. So I think any game involving anyone in these relegation battles is going to be interesting, and I think they're going to be a lot more attacking than maybe we've seen some of those sides at the start of the season. So, yeah, I think we've got a really interesting set of fixtures. And I just had to pick the Tamagawa Classico to poke something at you after you forgot my name a few times last week.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, as I say, not at all confident about that. But, yes, I probably deserved that little dig there. So, no, fair enough then. And, yeah, by the way, we mentioned that we reversed the curse for Gunba Osaka with having Johnny on last week. Fans of the J1 Toyota race, they might want to petition us to get Scott McIntyre back on, because of course Scott famously declared that the title was the Yokohama F. Marinos's to lose, and then since then of course Frontale have extended their lead back out to 9 points. So maybe if you fancy it, listeners, get in touch and see if we can get Scott back on for next week, and then maybe the title race will be back on after that for once the international break is done and dusted. But for now we'll leave it there. I think, Sam, great to have you back, of course, although Johnny, as we said, did a terrific job last week. But, it's been fun running through this rollicking match day with you. We'll be back to do it all again next week before the international break kicks in.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me back, and thanks again to Johnny for stepping in last week. It was a terrific episode. It was kind of nice to actually sit back and enjoy an episode without thinking, oh, that voice is horrendous, Sam, come on, you've got to get something better. But yeah, it's been good to be back, and the J-League treated us to a terrific week, so hopefully same again for next week.
Yeah, sounds good to me. All right, well, yeah, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the match day 31 fixtures. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.